The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go, don't!
It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
And welcome to another edition of the Computer Corner. If it sounds like I'm on a phone, it's, well, because I'm on a phone. I'm actually in Dallas, Texas, and stuck here over the weekend. We have this cool technology, this magic little red box, and it's not cooperating at the moment, so we may buzz in and out of better sounding radio. But in the meantime, we've got the same great show as usual, the same show you've come to know and love over the last decade. We've got plenty of people to help make sure that the show goes well. Welcome. If this is your first time listening, it's a show about technology, about computers, about problems and things that you might have going on in your life or some of the joy in your life. It's a show that we do and hope it's entertaining to you and that we can help answer some questions and help people out with some of the problems that they have going on. We've got me here with you for the next 2 hours, Brandon Disney. I've also got Kevin Church back in studio. Say hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Not hi, Kevin. Like, hi, Kevin.
You got it.
Who else is there in the studio with you?
We got Robert here with us today.
Robert
as well.
D'Arezzo.
Hey, how's it going, Brandon?
Or D'Arezzo, as the some people like to say. And so we've got plenty of people to make sure to help you with whatever your questions, your consternation, your problems, your frustration, or your joy is with your technology. We got phone lines open at 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. And, of course, those phone lines generally book up pretty quickly, so you'll want to jump online now if you're looking to get in. And as you listen to the show throughout, if you hear people hang up and hear us help answer their questions, you'll know that there's a line open for you. Again, 602-277-5827. It's 602-277-KTAR. And whether you're in the Phoenix metro area and listening through our terrestrial broadcast on 92.3 FM, or you're out in the world, as many of you folks are, listening through our website at datadoctors.com/radio, you'll find a link there to listen live. Or you're listening to the podcast after the fact, you can subscribe via iTunes. Lots of choices there for you. You'll be able to call in, or if the phone line thing doesn't work for you, you're a little chicken of talking on the air, whatever the case might be, at that website, datadoctors.com/radio, you'll find links to ask questions, make suggestions, those types of things. So all that's there for you. Now, if you've listened to the show at all over the past week, month, year, decade, whatever the case might be, you know that we have a theme we bring each week, and we like to talk about something that's going on either with technology or in the news, whether it's the good news or the bad news, or things just designed to help you stay ahead of the technology curve. And this week, we decided to sort of take a look ahead at some of the new stuff coming down the pike. And so this week's theme is called What's Next, and it's based around a show that happens annually called Demo. And its Demo is short for... Well, short for something. I don't actually know what it's short for. Any of you guys know which demo is short for?
I'm going to throw this out there. It's a little weird, but maybe it's short for demonstration?
No. Demonstrate, usually that's what demo's short for, but demo actually stands for something. You know what we're going to do? When we take a break, we'll all dig into what demo really stands for. It started back in 1991, and it's a technology show. It's really talking about the future of technology, where things are going. And so whether it's the device you use to stream your television, like a TiVo, or the latest and greatest in gadgets from Apple or Palm, or technology in general, whatever the future holds for any particular company or particular piece of technology is usually demonstrated and shown off at Demo. And this year there was some interesting stuff, and we've got resources posted for you if you're interested in sort of getting a sneak peek at some of the things we'll talk about, or if you're interested in more information about the things we are talking about, datadoctors.com/radio. Of course, if you have calls or questions about any kind of new technology, you want sort of our advice on things you're looking to make a purchase, whether it's a mobile phone or television or a computer purchase, whatever the case might be. We got lots of people that are well-equipped to help you with those decisions. Of course, your regular questions about technology that's frustrating you or whatever kinds of problems, we'll take all those, 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR.
There's a couple things in that demo. I never heard of that particular thing before, and you know, there's a couple things that showed up this year that actually blew me and Robert's mind a little bit.
Blew your mind? How so?
And that's pretty hard to do, because some of the stuff you kind of expect. It's just the evolution of another idea. But the big one was the glass speaker.
The glass speaker. I didn't see that one.
It's pretty amazing. It's a piece of glass, or what appears to be a piece of glass, that generates sound directly from it. And the way they do it, basically, the device bends the glass to produce sound waves, and obviously it reflects whatever input device you have, but it can go right on the front of a TV, and the sound comes directly from the screen, rather than those cheap little things down at the bottom or the side or in the back. It's coming directly at you from the source, or what appears to be the source.
Well, the big thing is it sounds really cool, right? And it probably
sounds great.
Looks really cool, which is the best part, but does it actually sound cool in person? Right, the thought of it sounds cool.
You know, I watched the video, and they had the microphone up to it, so anything can sound good if you're going through a PA system like that. But when they pulled the microphone back and the guy started talking, you know, just from the, you know, my limited knowledge on sound, it didn't sound bad at all.
I think the biggest drawback on that, it's going to be priced for a long time too. They were talking about the expense. It's going to pretty much jump a TV's cost quite a bit if it's built into the TV.
But yeah, you know, if it's built into the TV, some people are willing to pay for a little bit better sound, and having those big speakers everywhere and things like that are kind of annoying, and they look bad, or they get in front of other furniture, whatever. That is just a great idea, I thought. It actually blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of cool stuff. And with things getting flatter and flatter, soon you'll be able to hang your picture on the wall that is also your television, that is also your aquarium and your fireplace, and you get the sound and the picture and the whole works. All they got to do is get that smell-o-vision working, and we're ready to rock and roll like a movie theater, right?
There you go.
So that's the kind of stuff we'll talk about today. Of course, we got lots more of what's next from Demo Fall 2009. And your calls, your questions, 602-277-5827. We're going to take a quick timeout and see if we can get our technology solved. And then we'll jump right into your calls, your questions right here on the Computer Corner. Stick around.
And we are back for another segment here on Data Doctors. We got Brandon on the line there in Dallas, Texas, doing the show remotely. A little broken up. Our technology broke down a little bit. We had a couple of errors with our microphones, but
I think I'm here now.
There we go.
You guys hear me now?
We can.
Well, see, we got a little bit of technology problems. If you're in Phoenix, it's 1219, or in Dallas, 219. And why that's important, I don't know, but that's why I sound a little bit funky, because I'm a couple time zones away, and our technology is not cooperating well. So we'll get through this one way or another, and see, even tech guys have tech problems too. But either way, we're still here for you. We're here all the way till 2 o'clock, or if you're in Dallas, 4 o'clock. And we're here to talk to you about your technology and about whatever kinds of problems you're having. I think we got one line open at 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. And, of course, we've got resources posted for you online, including links to ask questions or make suggestions. The website for that, datadoctors.com/radio. So with that, I think we should jump in and talk to a few people, see if we can help people out. Up first is George in Phoenix. George, welcome to the Computer Corner. How can we help you, sir?
Hi, I got a question for you. I got a program that I can't figure out what's going on, and I'm thinking it might be some sort of virus or rootkit or something, but let me tell you what I do know about it. Maybe you can help me figure out what's going on.
Okay.
First off, my computer's been acting a little funny, but slowing down, acting weird, but this may be totally unrelated. I went in and I looked in through the Process Explorer from SysInternals, and I can see on one of my service hosts, EXE programs, that's running in the background, and you know, I'd never noticed unless I looked here. There's a run DLL32 that's hooked up to the service host. It's running a file in my system 32 named khfgxxoo.dll, which obviously sounds really suspicious in and of itself. That file is not there when I looked at it. Look for it in Explorer. Here's the weird thing about it. I can kill it off just fine through Process Explorer. But if I do exactly on the hour, it comes back. And I get a donk, like some sort of noise in, you know, my event viewer, you know, in one of the logs. And I can't find an example of that to tell you what's in it, but I have seen it in the past there.
Hey, George.
But
the fact that you know about Process Explorer and you've got this SBC host and all, you deserve the nerd alert siren if we had such a thing.
Okay, thank you.
So, have you tried taking that program and the you said it was started with a K, I don't recall exactly, but something.exe. Have you tried Googling that to see what that actually is associated with?
I've done, it says it's a generic Trojan. I've run AVG free. I've run the McAfee that comes with Cox against it. Nobody can see what it is.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that's going to be reported as malware on your computer, there's antivirus software that you typically run on your computer. It's meant to prevent viruses. Mm-hmm. And for more common stuff, it can certainly do a pretty decent job of cleaning up. But if you've got some kind of deeper level infection, whether it's a Trojan or a rootkit or whatever the case might be, in most cases, trying to run software on the same machine that is infected is not going to prove real effective. So what happens when people come into our stores? We generally speaking, when we have bad infections and things, we end up taking the customer's hard drive out of their machine, and we sort of slave it up to one of our additional like tech machines, and we'll run all the scans and things from that. So we're not in the customer's already infected environment. And frankly speaking, that's oftentimes what has to be done to get that kind of stuff out of a machine. So if you're not having any results or any luck with what you're doing, that may be part of the problem. The other thing may be some of the tools you're using and some of the free antivirus programs out there. There's a reason they're free, and oftentimes they're good at detecting and getting rid of sort of all the known databasable threats that are out there, but there's other things out there that infect computers that are more pattern-based, and they oftentimes don't have that kind of protection built in.
Okay.
So if you're suspicious of virus or malware activity, there's a couple of ways to go. Either get some help from somebody that's got the ability to help you get that drive out and slaved up and all those kinds of things, or there are a couple of options out there where if you've got some time and you understand a little bit about technology and you're not afraid to do a little experimenting, you can create something called a live boot disk, where you can boot into a CD that essentially has you not in your own operating system, that gives you that similar kind of setup where you can do scans then outside of your own infected operating system.
Got it. Yeah,
I
can do
that. Does that make
sense to you at all? That sounds like a good approach, and yeah, you're right. I understand everything you said, and I appreciate
it. I just wanted to make sure we didn't go off the nerd scale and jump off the deep end, which I think for at least half the people listening, we might have done that.
Well, in that case, I apologize, but I'm grateful for your help.
Oh, no. No need to apologize. You're one of those guys that calls in that has done a lot more research than most, and the fact that you've taken the time and you know where to sort of go and look tells me that you probably, with some time, can solve this problem. It's just probably a different approach you need to take. So,
sounds good.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Hey, you bet, George. Hey, have a great weekend. Thanks for the call.
You know, the thought process of going onto Google, typing in that process you're not too sure about, something that everybody can do without really harming the computer at all, but a good way to do a little bit of research and to see if you really do have a problem or not.
Right, and the next step for a lot of people is when they see what it's going to take to get that thing cleaned out, either one of two things happens. Their eyes glaze over and go, all that? No thanks. Or, I don't even know what that step two says. So, you know, if that's you, this is the kind of show that was built for people just like you. And we can help you sort of guide down the path and figure out how to solve some problems or point you in a good direction at least. So that opens up a line, 602-277-5827. We've been talking a little bit about some of the stuff coming out in technology, and we've got resources posted for you if you're interested. datadoctors.com/radio. It's what's next. And it's really what's next in technology. We'll talk a little bit more about some of those things. We talked about glass speakers before. There's something that I'm sure is near and dear to Robert's heart, which is the new Microsoft, what's that thing, the Xbox 360.
Oh, Project Natal.
Yeah, so I'm sure we'll spend a little time talking about that, because that will blow a lot of people's minds, just the idea of what can be done there. And, of course, more of your calls and questions. It's the Computer Corner, 602-277-5827. Robert D'Arezio, Kevin Church, Brandon Disney. We are the Data Doctors, and we're in the house till 2 o'clock, so stick around. We'll be back. Shut up.
I think we're back. Are we back, Kevin? Imagine that.
Sorry, just trying to figure out the technology on this end a little bit. It seems like a common theme. Everybody calling in has problems while we're dealing with our own.
We're having our own little struggles, but either way, we're making the best of it. And, of course, taking care of you as we have for over a decade. We've got a line or two open at 602-277-5827 if you want to dial on in to the Computer Corner, or if you want to join us online, you can do so at datadoctors.com/radio. And we're talking a little bit about some of the new things that are coming in technology. And, of course, we got your calls, your questions, again, at 602-277-5827. Before we talk more about some of the technology stuff, maybe we'll help some more people on phones, because I know we got a lot of people that have been holding and already for some of them a while. So let's see if we can take Rudy, who's up next here on the Computer Corner. Rudy, welcome. How can we help you, sir?
Two quick questions. I back up mostly on an external hard drive, but also on flash drives and DVDs. I know the best thing to do is to keep them off-site, but that's not always convenient. I'm wondering whether a fire safe would work. I have one for papers and such, but I've also seen some advertised for media, electronic media.
Yeah, a fire safe's not bad. I mean, still off-site is getting something away from where you've got your technology, and so a fire safe protects in the case of a fire, but doesn't necessarily protect in the case of a flood, which probably in the Southwest is not as much of a big deal as it might be, say, in Houston or in Louisiana. But there's other things, too, like theft, and a lot of people don't think about that. And oftentimes when people come and take technology, they take backup drives and whatever else is nearby as well. So those are the kinds of things you want to think about. Something that people are going to more and more is pairing their disk-based or their flash-based backups with some form of online backup. And so that takes care of the off-site thing sort of automatically. You don't have to think about it and deal with it a lot.
Right.
The other simple thing you can do is if you're already using a flash drive, you know, those things, a lot of them come with the ability to attach them to, like, a key ring. So you can put them with your keys, and it's pretty impossible to leave the house and not have your keys. And so then you've taken your stuff off-site automatically. The downside to that is if you lose your keys, you also lose your data. And so it's only your backup copy, but there may be things on there that are sensitive that you don't necessarily want other people to be able to get at. And so that's something you got to think about and consider. And, it's part of the never-ending quest for the perfect backup system, right? So the best is really where you have layers of protection. And so if you have currently, like you have, a couple different forms of backup, and you're just looking for a simple way to do something off-site for your most critical stuff, there are a couple companies that offer free trials or free limited accounts where you can back up a limited amount of data. And if it's just the most critical stuff, that may be something that would work for you. Or some people just say, you know, I don't want to be limited, I don't want to think about that, and they abandon all their sort of traditional backup systems and go completely online. And that seems to be where a lot of the world's gone to or is going, because it's just, it's so convenient.
You know what the temperature is that I have to worry about in a fire safe?
It's going to depend on exactly the storage media and stuff. If it's on a hard drive, hard drives generally contain metal platters and things inside of them, but there's a lot of components on the outside that aren't metal, and so they don't do well with a lot of heat. I don't know. I'm sure you could find some technical information at manufacturers' websites and things about what temperatures are good for operating and what temperatures things can be exposed to. In theory, a fire safe ought to do the job, but I don't know if I'd want to rely on that in an actual fire.
Okay, the other quick question. Reading on a computer screen, I mean, a lot of these, sometimes the screen is bright and the text is pretty dim, is a problem. I know in the old WordPerfect, you could get a blue screen with white writing.
Yes,
is there any way to improve the legibility of text on a computer screen?
Are you talking about just for being able to read back things, and specifically are you talking about like in Microsoft Word, or are you talking about on web pages and all kinds of things?
All kinds of things.
So for web pages, there's a quick, simple way that works really pretty well. If you take a section of text and highlight it by taking your mouse and sort of dragging it over and highlighting a section, it'll actually invert the colors, and so it'll put a dark background with light text sort of by nature. And that, for a lot of people, is real effective, and it's quick and it's easy, and there's no program to install. So that usually works fairly well. Something you can do in at least in versions of Word up to and including 2003, and I think they probably kept the feature in 2007, there were some settings you could go in and you could change the default background colors, and you could set it up much like WordPerfect, where it would be like a blue background with white text. So that's definitely doable in all of the versions of Office for sure, except for 2007, and it may be doable there. I just don't know for sure. I haven't tried it. So there's definitely some options. If you're really interested in making things as reader-friendly as possible, there's other options, which is also in the control panel. You can play with some of the themes. There's a couple of them that specifically highlight colors and do a better job there. Of course, this is another place where Google's your friend. For any specific program, you could type in, for example, Word and better visibility, that kind of thing in Google, and I'm sure you're going to find other people who have come up with different solutions and things, and so there's lots of stuff out there to kind of look at.
Okay, thank you.
Does that make sense, Rudy?
Yes.
Great. Hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. We got a line open, 602-277-5827. Hey, anything, Kevin or Robert, that you guys saw? You know, we talked about the glass speaker thing. What else did you see that you thought was pretty cool or looked pretty promising for some new technology coming down the pike?
Robert's been hollering and hooting about something that actually sounded pretty awesome. I don't know the biggest point to it, but Robert could probably explain it to you.
The coolest thing is there's a piece of technology, and you know when you want to hang out with your friends and family and you give everyone a call and say, hey, let's just hang out, and they're like, I really don't want to leave my house, and you don't want to leave your house, and well, no one wants to leave their house. Well, how do you meet with your friends and family without anyone leaving the house? Well, they have a program called Zorap, which allows you to have a conference, a video conference with your up to, you know, maybe four people. And you'll be able to download and share videos and photos and see your other three friends and family and talk to them as if they were all there with you.
And what's this thing called?
Zorap.
Spell that.
Z-O-R-A-P.
Zorap. Z-O-R-A-P as in Paul.
P as in Paul.
Interesting. All right. So it's like video conferencing, but less the stuffy boardroom style and more the having a family get together.
Yeah, sharing photos, sharing videos, talking. Yep.
I mean, it sounds like a cool idea, but I love my friends and all. I'd rather hang out with them than be stuck on a phone. I imagine that this will probably irritate me even more because I'm having to look at them and try to come up with something that important to talk about through video conferencing. So I don't know. It's a cool idea, but I just don't see a place for it in my life.
You don't think it's happening for you, huh?
No.
All right.
Let's see, if you were all hanging out and you were all drinking and you were all already at home, no one has to be the designated driver.
Yeah, but...
So we're all this to eliminate a designated driver. I don't know about that.
I know something else that does that. It's called the taxi cab.
Taxi cab, hey.
Yeah. That's the taxi cabs are new Zorap.
But for Robert, there's no technology involved, which means no way.
No way.
You can't do that.
Exactly. So we've got more ideas and things of coming items. What's next? Some of the new upgrades. Resources posted for you. datadoctors.com/radio. And, of course, we'll weave that in and out throughout the show here. Let's see if we can talk to Gene, at least get an idea of what Gene's got going on with his Windows Vista computer. Gene, are you there? Gene?
My screen just went blank, but it says, oh, here it is. The Windows Vista Home Premium product key you typed is invalid for activation.
Okay. So is there a sticker on the side of your machine that has this product key, or?
Gee, I don't know where that would be.
Usually on computers, it's on one of the side panels, and so if you're looking at the front of it on either the left or the right-hand side, on some computers they put it right on the top, and on very few they'll put it on the back. It's a little sticker. It'll say Microsoft, and it'll have some pretty colors and things, and it's this little, what they call a certificate of authenticity. And so it'll have a long product key, and either you don't have such a thing and that might present itself a problem. Did the computer come with Vista, or did it get installed later?
It was working fine early this morning, and then all of a sudden this popped up, and it said something about counterfeit program.
Right. Did the machine come with Windows Vista, or was that added?
Yes, it did. Uh-huh.
Okay, and did you buy it from, like, a big box store, or?
From Best Buy.
Okay, so what you need to do, I mean, this may be a sign of a problem, and it may be something that's not an issue at all. You got to try to locate that sticker that's going to be located somewhere on that computer, and there should be one somewhere.
This copy of Windows is not genuine, it says on the front.
Yeah, it may or may not be. It may have been registered with the wrong number. There's a lot of different things that could cause that.
What it's really trying to say is I need proof that this was legitimately purchased. And usually you don't just have that pop up for no reason. Something's usually done. But whether it's on a disk that came with the computer, which is pretty unlikely, it would look like a bunch of gibberish on a pretty sticker. And if you can't locate that and you registered the computer through Microsoft when you first turned it on, they should be able to help you. But getting that key is extremely important for you to be able to get rid of that message. If you can't find it, that presents a bigger problem, which you'd probably have to talk about to Microsoft regarding options. But you got to find that sticker.
So let's give you some clear direction here, Gene, on what to do sort of next. So first, if you can locate that sticker, then it should have some step-by-step directions where you can enter in the number that's going to be on there, and it's a code that's made up of both number and letter digits, so it's alphanumeric, right? And it'll let you then sort of reactivate with the proper number. If you can't find that sticker or it's not working through that kind of process, then you'd need to, there should be some information on how to contact Microsoft right there. They should have a phone number or a website you can go to. The other option is to go back to the manufacturer. So it wouldn't be, in this case, Best Buy. It would be whoever made the computer, whether that's a Toshiba or a Sony or whatever the case is.
A Compaq Presario.
Okay, so you'd contact HP or Compaq and work through their process with them. This whole thing points back to a bigger frustration that people often recognize only after the fact, which is, the reality of buying a computer, it's not what you buy, it's who you buy it from, because when you have a problem like this, then how you deal with that problem becomes the real issue when it comes to technology. The purchase itself becomes pretty secondary when you start thinking about it that way. So in your case, you probably can't go back to the retail store. You'll have to go back to the manufacturer, and that's kind of a little bit rough. We've got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, more your calls and questions.
I sure appreciate it. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Computer Corner. If you're just tuning in, you can find us online and join us there at datadoctors.com/radio. Of course, we have a couple of lines open, 602-277-5827, 277-KTAR. We're talking a little bit about some of the future stuff coming up in technology, and it all comes out of a show that happens annually called DEMO. And I promised you we'd look up what that stands for, and I haven't forgotten about that. I just haven't done it yet, so we'll tell you what DEMO is short for, because it's more than just demonstration. It has to do with technology and electronics. And, again, we've got resources at datadoctors.com/radio. If you're not already a weekly newsletter subscriber, you might want to become one. We'll send you all kinds of great tips, including our Headwhack of the Week, our Geek Speak of the Week, a little primer of the radio show, links to the weekly CNN.com segments, all kinds of good stuff there. And we've added the new poll of the week if you want to get subscribed. You can go to our website, datadoctors.com, look where it says you can subscribe to the newsletter, put in your email address, and off you go. If you want to see a quick preview of what those newsletters look like, you'll find that in our free help center under the section where it says weekly newsletter. So all easy stuff, all stuff to help you stay clean in your technology world and help you navigate the frustration that sometimes can be technology. I'm trying to figure out here time-wise. Let's jump back on phones because we got a couple people that have been hanging out for a while. We got Andy who's up next, who wants to talk about speeding up his computer. Andy, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Hi. I have CA Internet Sweep, and it did an automatic update, and when it did, it changed my systems around, and now I'm having, when I try to get on the Internet and stuff, it just will not let me. It won't upload anything. I've tried to go into the advanced setting to reduce the settings to where lower levels for protection, and still not allow me to get on like the internet or AOL. What would be causing? Why would that be causing the problem? I had no problem before, but now.
So let's step back and ask a couple questions here. You said it didn't. Overnight update? Is it something that took that long?
Well, it updated, and I turned off my computer. Then the next day, after I came home from work, that's when I noticed that I started having the problems. And it actually, like I had a wireless router, I had to disconnect that and reset my modem because it just reset like everything. And,
yeah,
you know,
my guess is just some kind of coincidence because, I mean, this is a sort of a normal thing for antivirus software to update and get updates, and we don't see necessarily people coming in with just that kind of problem. Usually that's something that maybe was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. You've restarted the machine, you get the same kind of issue regardless?
Yeah.
Okay.
And no matter what I do, reboot it, you know, reset the program and everything, it just, like AOL, I could get on the Explorer Internet, but AOL, it just won't let me get on.
Are you on dial-up, or are you on some kind of high-speed?
I got a Cox cable modem.
Okay. And so you say it won't let you get on. Does that mean you open up the AOL program and it doesn't do anything, or?
It just, when I open it up, it just won't load it up. It won't do nothing. It just, like, it starts trying to, but it just will not load it up. It just, you see, like, just a little picture starting to come up, and it just stays like that and just freezes.
Are you in front of that machine by any chance?
No, actually, I'm in the car right now. So.
Okay. There's something, I, if you were in front of it, I'd walk you through looking at what we call the number of processes. And so you can find that by simply doing a Control-Alt-Delete when you're sitting in front of the computer and it's on in Windows. And then you'll click on a button that says Task Manager, and in the lower left-hand corner, it'll tell you the number of processes that are running. And if that number is up north of probably 50 or so, that means you got a lot of stuff going on there and something else. My guess is that this is just a coincidence that this update occurred around the same time you started having this issue. I don't know. You know, what you're talking about is not sort of the norm for that or most any program, unless it's doing some kind of really thorough, extensive scan, in which case you can pause that or stop that and things would go back to normal. It probably is something else that's going on in that machine that has little or nothing to do with the CA software itself.
Okay. Because like I said, before it all happened, I had no problems. Now, just all of a sudden, with this update that they did, it just seems everything went wacky.
Yeah, I mean, there's something else you can try next time you're in front of it. Like I said, take a look at those processes and see if that number's really kind of up there and crazy, and if so, then you got a whole different issue there. The other thing
all
you
right.
can do is, if have you ever used the System Restore feature in Windows?
No, I haven't.
All right, well, you can go into System Restore, and you'll find that under Start, then Programs, Accessories, System Tools. It's called System Restore, and it lets you go back to a previous point in time and sort of see and work with things the way they were there. So, hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. We've got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, we got more of your calls and questions. We're talking more about the future of technology. And we got lines open, 602-277-5827. It's the Computer Corner. Stick around.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
Welcome to hour number two here on the Computer Corner. If you're just joining us, we've been talking a little bit about some of the new things coming in technology, and we've got resources posted for you online at datadoctors.com/radio. We've also got a couple of lines open for you if you want to join in the conversation or call with your computer question or your problem, 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. Before we jump back to those calls, before we talk more about what's coming in technology, it's time for a little piece we call our Geek Speak of the Week. Each and every single week, we bring you a word, a phrase, some vernacular, something out of the world of geekdom. We translate the Geek Speak into regular human speak and help you just understand one more piece of terminology that's used out there in the world so you can be better equipped to handle your technology world. This week's Geek Speak of the Week, what is it, Robert?
Well, I'm very guilty of being this. It's a cyberchondriac.
Cyberchondriac? How are you guilty of that?
Well, for example, I was getting some aches in my side, and I was telling Kevin, because we were working together that day, and I was saying, you know what? I got to Google search this and find out what is hurting the side of my right above my waistline. And well, I got all kinds of stuff up in the Google search. You're going to die. You got to go see a doctor. It could be bladder. It could be who knows what. It could be a heart problem.
So pretty much not Google searching and Google searching, the results are the same. It could be anything from nothing at all to you're going to die.
Yes. So I was kind of getting paranoid. I said, well, shoot, I could have all kinds of problems. And I was kind of getting a little nervous. And Kevin says, just go home and rest it off. So I took his advice, and things were all right.
So, Kevin, I heard you're not a real doctor. You just play one on the radio. But apparently you're wrong.
How do you figure?
I don't know. You gave him medical advice, and now that makes you a doctor. I think better than probably Google searching, and maybe we can check with Dr. Sam Benjamin, who's up next here on KTAR. But I'm guessing Google searching for trying to diagnose a disease and then treat yourself, probably not the best way to get your problem solved. I'm guessing he's going to say that you probably want to talk to a real live human being, maybe see him in person.
Well, think about this, too, for the cybercondriac thing. You know, when the swine flu craze first started happening, you know, emergency rooms, urgent care filled up a little bit from people who said, oh, man, I don't feel right. I might have that. You know, and it's always good to seek medical advice, especially when you don't know anything. But at the same time, reading an article doesn't make you sick.
Right. So doing some research, maybe not bad, but for the real diagnostic and to really find out what's up, you might need to go see somebody in person. So cybercondriac, this week's Geek Speak of the Week. Nicely done, Robert.
Yeah, and there's a reason why these doctors spend so many years at school is they probably know better than a Google search what's actually going on.
Yeah. Yeah, probably a little bit more than that. And maybe they look at articles and things from time to time, and they have their own resources, but they've been a little better trained than you and I. Just real quickly, some of the items in this week's newsletter, we have something that I think a lot of people who have both Vista systems and XP systems on the same network might have run into. It's our head whack of the week. It's Vista can't see XP systems. So if you're in a house or in a business, you have both Windows XP and Vista systems that are on the same network, and you go in and look in the network section, sometimes you're not going to see both of those. You're not going to see from the Vista systems the XP and vice versa. It's because there's a little something extra that's included in Windows Vista that doesn't exist on Windows XP. And so there's a download. We have a link direct to Microsoft that you can get on the XP machine that allows that machine to show up in the network map. And if you're looking for that, you can subscribe to our newsletter. And to do that, you go to our website, datadoctors.com, click on the Free Help Center, and then click where it says Weekly Newsletter. And if you are looking for that tip and you're not already subscribed and you missed it, then at that same page in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the last 20 newsletters archived for your convenience. You can click on it and print it and remember it and think about it and do whatever it is you need to do. But the link's all there, all good stuff. There's no ads or spam or garbage, and we don't sell your name. So if you're looking for that kind of information delivered to you on a regular weekly basis, just subscribe, datadoctors.com/radio. That's the place for you. Back to the phones. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I think up next, who's been hanging out the longest, is Jude. Jude, are you there?
Are you there, Jude?
Maybe we don't have Jude anymore. Let's go instead to Jenna, who has some questions about drivers. Jenna, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Hi. I'm not real techno-savvy, and I have a computer that probably does lots of things, and I've been having trouble with it. Slowing down my wireless connection, I'm staying on, lots of other problems. And someone suggested I needed to update something, and I don't know what I had to update. So I went online and looked up updates and found the driver detective, and so I bought that. And my husband said, you don't know anything about that. I was wondering if you could tell me whether that's a good program.
So I can tell you, and I'll speak for the guys in the studio, too. It's not a piece of software that I would use or I would recommend anybody use. I can't necessarily say it's a bad piece of software, but if you've got a problem with a driver, there's something visually that's going to tell you that doesn't cost anything, and it just requires you to know where to click. And for anybody listening, if you want to see if you have any problems with any devices that would indicate that you may need a driver, you'd simply go into your control panel, and then look for the icon that says system and double-click that, and then there should be a hardware or a device manager button or tab you'll want to click on, and you're looking specifically in your device manager for anything that has a red X across across its little icon or a yellow exclamation point. Either of those indicate a problem that generally is solved by getting a correct driver installed or an updated driver installed. And so any piece of software that you're going to buy that's supposedly going to magically figure that out for you, I don't know if that's something that I would spend money on and or trust to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. So that specifically. Now, what you got to this diagnosis of I need a driver, and you started trying to solve the problem because of what issue exactly?
It was moving slow. I couldn't get videos to play. My wireless connection keeps disconnecting, and my dial-up. I live out in the boondocks, so I have a wireless and a dial-up connection, so that when the wireless connection goes down, I use my dial-up. So my People PC website, I can't even get that to function, but I haven't looked into it because I like your chondria name. I have technochondria.
Technochondria, I like it.
Yes.
You just invented a new gig speak for us there, Jude. So yeah, I mean, if things are running slow, the last thing I would think of, and tell me if you guys think I'm nuts here, but the last thing I would think of would be drivers. That's usually if something doesn't work. For example, you don't hear any sound, or your modem won't connect, or it doesn't even see your modem, or those kinds of things. That's what drivers are for. They have really generally nothing or very little to do with speed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we got is we got a little bit of a wrong diagnosis, and then we've taken the diagnosis that says, well, we got to do drivers. We've gone down that path. Imagine in your car, for example, every time you hit the brakes, you'd hear this squealing sound. And so a friend said, oh, I know how to solve that problem. Get your oil changed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you and I both know that changing your oil isn't going to solve that problem, right?
Right, right.
And so the diagnosis is where the problem is. And if you've got speed issues, that's likely due to either a lack of resources. So it could be adding more memory will speed it up. Generally, that's the last thing I would try. More common than that is over time, Windows accumulates lots of junk, and it needs to be cleaned up. And so going through and cleaning out things that are automatically starting up and running in the background, that kind of stuff, that's what's really going to get things sped back up and cleaned up. And whether it's something you're going to work through on your own or you're going to need some help is really a question of your comfort level. And by your description, it sounds like you're probably going to need to get some help on something like this. So my advice is to get a better diagnosis of what's actually going on and then figure out what to do from there. Hey,
okay.
Thanks for the call, Jude. We appreciate it. We got to take a quick timeout here. When we come back, we got more of your calls and questions. 602-277-5827. It's the Computer Corner. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. If you're listening online, we've got a place for you to join us at datadoctors.com/radio. Of course, if you're listening to the regular broadcast, then you already know where to go for that whole thing. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, just search for us in iTunes. Search for Data Doctors. You'll find the podcast. You can subscribe right there, and you'll get the show on demand there for you. So those are your options for listening. Of course, we got a couple of lines open right now. 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. And we're talking a little bit about what's next. And I told you that we'd research a little bit and find out what demo stood for in terms of the show demo that is where sort of emerging technology launches. And funny enough, after digging around on the website, it doesn't look like it stands for anything other than demonstration. So maybe Kevin was right earlier, right?
You know what? I'm not that surprised.
So here's what's cool and different, though, about demo, because there's all kinds of different shows that talk about technology and consumer electronics. And so at demo, the format's a little bit different. There's a huge ballroom, and everybody's there, and it's sort of a conference format. But instead of there being all kinds of crazy PowerPoints and flashy presentations and that kind of stuff, they get the people that are actually behind the technology and people that have staked their careers and their lives on what they're showing. And so they're really sort of passionate people. They get 6 minutes on the demo stage to demonstrate their product and try to demonstrate how it'll change the world. And if people are excited about it, then they can go and interact in what's called the demonstrator pavilion. And it's just a different kind of format. Imagine you only get 6 minutes to put on your pitch, and you know, you don't have all the normal accoutrements, so to speak, of the PowerPoint and the flash presentations and all that cool stuff. So a different kind of event, kind of a cool thing. I got to go check that out sometime.
Yeah, you guys normally do CES.
Yeah, that's the huge monster show in Vegas that happens every year, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on there. But if you go to any of the presentations, they're more traditional, sort of dry, stuffy. There's not a lot of surprises. You can go see some keynote people, and that's kind of cool, but it sort of gets a little old. And the demo thing sort of sounds like a fresh, cool way where you got people up there that aren't professional presenters. They're the people that are really passionate about the technology that they've created, and they're there showing it off in sort of a raw format. And, sounds kind of cool to me.
Yeah, and on demo.com, they have most of the videos from those particular manufacturers/companies on what exactly they were demoing. So if you want to see that glass or what looked like glass be the speaker, they'll actually demo it for you. It's online. You can see it yourself.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of companies that they've launched at demo, companies like Salesforce.com and TiVo and Palm, and some of these companies, they first showcased their stuff at this show. So it's generally a big deal for what's coming, and the things that happen there, you'll start to see roll out in products and services and things in the next, 6 months, a year, something like that. So lots of cool stuff comes out of there. Let's jump back on the phone, see if we can help somebody out before we have to go to bottom of the hour news. We've got up next, it's Ellen, who's got a computer that has some mysterious problem. Ellen, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Are you there, Ellen?
Hi. Hello?
Hello,
hi.
We've got you.
Oh, good, great. Yes, I have a problem. I have a problem with my computer freezing, and the only alternative I have is to shut it down and reboot.
And when you say it freezes, it just locks up, stops responding, you can't do anything, or?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
When this happens, next time it happens, there's something we want you to check. And it's specifically a simple little test. Are you familiar with the numlock key on your keyboard?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that's one of those cool little toggle keys that has a light to indicate whether or not the computer recognized that you pressed the key.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a cool little diagnostic tool that we use when a machine's locking up to see is it what's called a hard lock or not. And so if next time it locks up and freezes, if you go and tap that little key a few times, if it doesn't toggle the light on and off like you're used to, that means it's hard locked, and that almost always indicates a hardware problem. Versus if it does toggle on and off, that may or may not be a hardware problem. So it's a nice little easy test to see. The other thing you can do is you can try rebooting into safe mode. And
yeah, I'm sorry, my husband showed me that, and because we were trying to get rid of a Norton, and
okay.
When I went into part of the computer where it lists everything, where you want to remove program, and
yeah.
You have to wait for it to list. It wouldn't let me, it was free.
Okay, we have a couple ideas here. Ellen, if you don't mind, we're going to put you back on hold. We're going to take a quick time out, get caught up with some traffic, some weather, some news. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more to Ellen. And, of course, your call, your question, 602-277-5827. Back right after this. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. If you missed any part of the show, we've got resources posted for you anytime and online at datadoctors.com/radio. We're talking a little bit about some of the new technology that's coming down the pike, some of the stuff that was showcased at this year's demo show, which is, as we've kind of discussed a little bit, a kind of different technology conference where the people behind the technology get 6 minutes to show the world their best, latest, greatest product, invention, service, whatever it is. And then if it's cool stuff, it makes it out to the world where you and I see it. And if it's not so cool, it probably dies right there. Again, those resources posted if you want to take a look. Some of the cool stuff coming down the pike. datadoctors.com/radio. Of course, we have a couple of lines open. 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. Now, before we went to the break, we were talking to Ellen, who I think we still have hanging out there on line 3.
Hi.
Ellen, are you still with us?
Yeah, I am.
Perfect. So you were saying that your machine sometimes is just locking up and you're ending up rebooting it. We gave you a little tip on how to check to see if it was a hard lock or not by next time it happens, trying to tap on that numlock key to see if it toggles the light on and off,
okay.
As usual.
And I have some information that might help.
Are you on a speakerphone at all, Ellen? Because I'm having a real tough time hearing.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Let's see. Is that better?
It's a little bit better. If you can get rid of the whole speakerphone thing, that really makes it...
Is that better? No.
Yeah.
That's better. Okay. I'm taking a class in college, and it's an online class, and along with the package came a trial software of Microsoft Ultimate 2007, and I added that, I downloaded that. uploaded it. And that's when I started getting these freezing problems.
It came with, there's Microsoft, like, Office Ultimate 2007, or?
Yes, that's the name of the trial software.
Okay, so it might be that that's caused some kind of problem or some kind of conflict in your machine. The software itself shouldn't be an issue, but there may have already been some other pre-existing condition that now has sort of been made mad by the addition of that software. And, you know, every time you add something to a computer or change the way it works, by installing software or removing software, you're changing its configuration. And you do that long enough and often enough, and sometimes things just don't go so right. So another thing you can try is, if this is happening pretty frequently, you can reboot into what we started to talk about called safe mode. In safe mode, Windows loads up in a different way. Instead of loading all the different things that it's been told to load up right now, it only loads sort of the bare essentials. And what it's good for specifically is diagnosing problems. And so if you were to boot into safe mode and then work with the computer a little bit, it's going to look a little strange. It might react a little bit differently. But most of the things you're used to doing should function there. The idea here is we just got to get a little test. And so we got to spend some time working in safe mode. And if the problem never occurs while you're in safe mode, then that tells us that we don't have a hardware problem, and we've got to look at then the software side of things.
Okay.
And so that's another really good tool, and you spending a little time doing this is going to save you or whoever's ultimately going to fix this thing a bunch of time in troubleshooting the problem.
Okay.
And so if you were to come to me and say, hey, Brandon, you know, I took this machine, it does this when I'm in normal mode, but when I'm in safe mode, everything works just fine, albeit a little bit strange, a little bit slow, then we'd know immediately, well, let's not look at much in the way of the hardware side of things. Let's only look at the software side of the world versus, no, even in safe mode, it still locks up. And when it does lock up, I can't toggle that number lock thing that you told me about.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to start really focusing on the hardware side of things. And so you're really helping us determine where to start looking at issues, or helping yourself determine, as the case may be.
Okay, that sounds like a good plan.
Sure. So the other thing I wanted to let you know is if you really run into some frustrations, some problems, that kind of thing, you're welcome to drop by any of our stores around town. And our guys are pretty friendly guys, or our gals, and they're happy to talk with you a little bit and sort of take a quick look and see if they can help point you in a direction as well. So sometimes just having somebody see something can help. So you feel free to use us for that as well.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay?
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Ellen. You have a great weekend. We've got a line open now, 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. I believe up next is Nadine. Nadine, are you with us?
Hello?
There's Nadine. We found her. I understand you've got some problems on the Internet, and I think most everybody has some kind of problem at one point or another on the Internet. What's happening in your case?
I do. I have my home computer, and I've got Quest as my high-speed Internet service, so, of course, I have their DSL box. And then I got a laptop at Christmas 2 years ago, and so I've got the router hooked up through the home computer. And it's just been probably about 7 months ago, all of a sudden now, my home computer, the Internet service, is constantly going down. And I'll call Quest, and they're saying it's not them whatsoever. They've come out, they've checked my line, and said the lines are fine.
Okay.
So, of course, my home computer goes down, then my laptop doesn't work either.
So let me make sure I understand. You've got two different computers sharing a single Internet connection, and when the Internet goes out, it goes out on both, not just on one?
Correct.
Okay, and do both machines plug in, like, through a hard wire to this router, or one of them wireless, or are they both wireless, or how do we connect?
I have the wireless router.
Okay, so are both machines wireless, the desktop and the laptop?
No, just the laptop is wireless.
Okay, so the desktop machine plugs directly into that router.
Correct.
Okay, so if both are going out at the same time, if it was only one or the other, then I'd say we got to start looking at one of the other devices. But if it's both going out at the same time, then you've either got a communication problem with the DSL modem, which is the device supplied by Quest, or the router, or both. Right? And so if next...
I purchased two brand new ones, too, because I thought that was probably what the problem was, and it didn't fix it.
Okay. And so you got new of these devices, and when it goes out on both of them regardless?
Correct.
Okay. Is it possible? So normally, if this was set up the way I would set it up, or most guys would set it up, they would set it up so that the two work independently from each other, and the router was the key to everything working. There's another way that things can be set up, and that's through something called Internet connection sharing, which you would set up on, like, the desktop machine. And now it is what's doing the sharing rather than the router. And so if it has a problem getting online, then everything connected through it's going to have a problem. Do you know if yours was set up with internet connection sharing?
I don't know. My daughter-in-law set it up. I have no clue.
So your daughter-in-law came and set it all up for you?
Yeah.
So it's from what you're telling me, there's you know, like anything, there's more than one way to do just about anything. But if the two are both being affected regardless and they both go together, you replaced equipment, all these kinds of things, I would guess that they were set up with this internet connection sharing or something like it, which if it was me, I'd change that and I would set them up so that they can work independently from each other. So it should be set up that the desktop machine shouldn't need to be on for you to be able to use the laptop and vice versa.
Okay.
So it sounds like you're probably going to need to get some help getting this either set up properly or reconfigured, or somebody kind of looking at the pieces you got and making sure that you're taking advantage of the technology you have in the best way possible.
Okay.
So either get the daughter-in-law maybe back out there and bribe her with baked goods or adult beverages or whatever it takes, right? or you'll have to go the professional route and get somebody that can come out and take a look and kind of get things straightened out for you.
Okay, and can I just ask you one more quick question? Somebody was telling me that you generally have to replace your computer about every 3 to 4 years. Is that true?
There's absolutely no rule of thumb when it comes to replacing computers. The reality is the electronics, the technology itself, it generally is not the determining factor in why we replace computers, meaning that the computer functionally still works just fine, but most of us replace the computer because we want to do something that it's not capable of doing, or we just sort of want something new. And so the same thing sort of holds true for most people in cars, right? Very few people drive a car until it doesn't work anymore and then get a new one. Most people trade that car in every however many years, maybe it's 3 years, maybe it's 4 years, maybe it's 2 years, because they want the shiny new one, or they want the new features, or they want the one that has some new cool technology, or right? So the same thing really generally holds true for most consumers when it comes to technology. They replace it not when it dies, but when they want the new cool thing. And you can take that in, you know, cell phones. When was the last time you got a new cell phone?
A couple of years ago.
And was it because your old one died or because you wanted some cool new thing that the one you had didn't do?
Because I want a new one.
Right. So that's the reality with computers, too. If your needs don't change, if the programs you use don't change, if what you want to do doesn't change, that computer, there are people that come in that have computers that are 6, 7 years old, and they're still working great for them because what they want to do today and what they did 6, 7 years ago hasn't changed substantially. And so there's definitely no tried and true answer to that question. It all comes down to what do you use it for, and does it do the job, or did it used to do the job that you want it to do?
Great. Thank you so much.
You bet. Hey, thanks for the call. We really appreciate you hanging out for so long, and thanks for listening.
You bet. I'll give you guys a call.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. I think that opens up another line, 602-277-5827. If we don't get you on the air, we've got Kevin and we've got Robert back in studio that'll help get you off the air. You guys are still hanging out there, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're still here.
And you're going to take care of people if we can't talk to them on the air, right?
Of course.
So it's no danger if you call in. We're going to get you helped one way or another. I know we got Jose and we got John that are hanging out there. We're going to get to your calls in just a minute. Before we go to a quick break here, any kind of final thoughts on some of the new stuff coming that was demoed maybe at Demo 2009?
Well, there was something pretty cool. For those of you that watch TV online, if you're trying to catch your latest episode, if it's lost or whatnot, and you have to log in, or you know, you go to the website, you stream the video. Well, now there's a new piece of technology that centralizes it. It's called Twirl TV, and it'll allow you to tag all the different shows that are free that you like to watch online or on your TV right there. So it's just in one spot.
So is this a website or a software or a hardware box or what is this thing?
It is a website.
And you said it's called Twirl TV?
Twirl TV.
That might be
software. But it also lets you interact with Facebook, too. So if you're watching shows and you want to talk about the show that you watched or the latest episode, you can tie that in with the Facebook. I guess they're going to have it to where you can talk to Facebook friends and family about what you were watching.
Well, and if you really wanted to get real nerdy, there was that other one that you talked about earlier where you sit around in video conference with all your friends.
Yep.
I guess you could sit around and watch the same stupid TV show together and not actually have any real human contact.
We're getting there. Robert's going to get there first. I'm sure of it.
If you have dual monitors set up, you could run both applications at the same time.
Somehow I knew I could count on you to bring the crazy weird stuff, Robert. We're going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, we got Jose and we got John, and we got room for you, 602-277-5827. It's the Computer Corner. Hang out with us. Welcome back. It's the final segment here on the Computer Corner. If you missed any part of the show, you can always catch up and go online at datadoctors.com/radio. Of course, there you'll also see links to previous shows. And I know we've been a little slow in getting the audio archives edited and uploaded and all those kinds of things. And I think last week's might still be missing, but we're going to get those posted up there really quick. And if you want to be alerted when they are available, the easiest way, subscribe to our podcast. Just search for Data Doctors at iTunes, and you'll find the podcast where you can subscribe, and it'll find those shows as they become available and download them right there to your computer or your device. So check those things out. We had somebody that sent in a what's probably a really good question through email. It's from JR, and it reads, "You keep telling us to back up, but you don't tell us what to back up. My 250-gig drive is almost full at this point. It would take forever to back up this all on a daily basis, and a lot of it's just junk anyway." He goes on to say his offline backup is limited to a small amount, and basically the question is what do I back up? And while it's the reality, JR, is the reason we don't talk about what to back up is that that's a different conversation for different people, and so it really depends on what is it that you'd be okay losing. And so from the most basic standpoint, if you can identify the types of things that are important, like, let's say, pictures, for example, then you just need to figure out where those pictures are located, and it depends on the program you're using, the operating system, where you store them, that kind of things, and then you back up that stuff. But most people, if you try to start with a limited list, the issue is that they only think about what they're thinking about at the moment, and there's other things beyond sort of the in-the-moment thinking that you don't realize you cared about until you don't have them anymore, or whatever your needs are today change down the road. And so the best thing is, if you can do it, to have a backup of everything. And even 250-gig drives or drives larger, there are backup systems out there. We have one, and there's lots of other companies out there that make them, that do what are called image-based or snapshot-based backups, where they back up everything and redo that backup on a regular recurring basis, and they take a snapshot. Now, those can take a little bit of time, but generally very doable. It's done after hours, sort of in the night, that kind of thing. There's also some newer technology, and we're getting ready to bring a new product on board in our data backup lineup that allows for what's called continuous data backup. And so the initial backup may take some time, and a lot of that's done at idle times when you're not using the computer, but then it keeps everything up to date sort of in real time when it finds idle time on your computer that you're not using it. So there's a lot of cool technology coming out that's now out, and it's been tested and a little bit more bulletproof. And it helps with this problem where the amount of data we're storing keeps increasing, and trying to decide what to back up is really not practical because it changes so often. So, JR, the bad news is there's not a one-size-fits-all answer. It depends on your situation. The good news is that we're getting better and better ways all the time to deal with that problem and to make it so we don't have to make a choice of what to back up. We just back up everything, because when in doubt, everything's good, even if it backs up some junk, because you'll always be sure to get what you need. So hope that helps answer your question, JR, or anybody else who had it. Of course, if you have questions, things like that, we'll take them at our website, datadoctors.com/radio. Just look for the link to ask a question. It couldn't be easier. You still there, Kevin, Robert?
Oh, yeah.
We're here.
Awesome. So I was going to try to see if we could squeeze in another caller, but I'm afraid if we do, we're not going to be able to answer the question real thoroughly. So Jose and who is that, Betty?
That's
if
Betty.
If you two want to just hang out there, we're going to get you one-on-one attention via Robert and Kevin as we wrap things up here. Again, for anybody else listening, if you missed any part of the show, you want to get caught up, datadoctors.com/radio. Before we sort of sign off, final thoughts, anything else that you saw? You guys have talked about a couple of the cool things you saw that were part of the demo conference. That Twirl TV, I definitely have to check out. Anything else that
there's
looks
a,
cool?
There's another thing. It's called Point of Wealth. It's a reverse ATM for those of you that are paid in cash and you don't believe in having a bank account or don't have a bank account. You're able to go to this ATM and put in cash and load a prepaid credit card up, and you know, you can actually use it to dump money into a retirement fund. It's supposed to have some pretty good features for those that don't want to have a bank account. So that might look to be promising if these stations become more readily available. The other thing is, though, that I don't like is the $1 to $2 charge that may be accrued every time you go to one of these stations.
There was something kind of ridiculous I saw in there that made me angry to think that people are going to use it. It's an app that crowdsources, so the users provide the content to this app, and it's for traffic. So now we've got people on their phones updating what the traffic is while they're on the road when we already have enough problems with them texting, let alone try to work a computer app.
So now we're going to be updating traffic while we're sitting in the middle of it.
That one irritated me.
So what's next? Are we going to have the iPhone tilt feature for your steering wheel?
I don't know. There's all kinds of cool stuff out there that's coming down the pike, including something that I'm kind of excited about. AT&T announced something called a microcell, a device that you can plug in to fix the connection problems that some of us experience. So that's near and dear to my heart for sure. Hey, thanks, guys, for helping hold things down. Sorry about our technology problems.
Oh, absolutely. We're here for you.
Awesome. Well, I'll see you guys next week, and we'll talk again. We'll probably be live in the studio back in Phoenix next week. Until then, Kevin Church wants to remind you, if you don't need it,
don't install it.
See you next week.